What is up, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle, where we talk about work, ministry, and the people who make an art out of bringing them together. I am so excited for episode 15, and I am so excited because I can't wait for you to meet Ugo. He is just a really cool guy. He works with Hesed House, which is in Aurora, and it's a PADS program for people going through homelessness. And so Ugo is the overnight supervisor, and he is just a really cool guy. And I think what's most fascinating to me about Ugo is that his love for people experiencing homelessness is just so infectious. You can just see how much he loves and cares for the people he serves. And you can just tell how much his ministry means to him, and how much it means to the way he goes about all of his life and the way that he has friends. And his ministry is sort of all encompassing, I think, in a really healthy way. I can't wait for you to hear from him, to learn from him, and to just see what he thinks about homelessness and people experiencing homelessness. So I would love it if you wouldn't mind sharing this on any of the social media platforms. I always appreciate that. And if you have not done so, I would love a review and a rating on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast, just so that more people know about the hustle. And I appreciate all your support. If you have people you want me to interview, if you have ideas of vocations, let me know. And I hope you enjoy this interview with Ugo. All right. Well, Ugo, I thank you for coming over and joining me here on the podcast. Why don't we get started with you just sort of talking about your story, kind of introduce us to you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Ugo's story, where to start, right?
Yeah, it's always the trick.
Yeah. I was born. No, that's too far back. That's too far back. I guess my story is from like where I'm at now and who I am, right? And I think it's a story of failing, right? I failed a lot. I still fail, but I'm cool with it now. I think back then I always tried to like not let anybody see my failures. Right? That's what we're supposed to, right? Supposed to be the best at it. And I'm not great at anything. I'll go do anything. So like where I'm at in my story right now, I'm thinking of it as chapters, right? And I'm like at the beginning of the book still. I think what brought me to where I'm at today is a lot my family, the house I was raised in with my parents. I had loving, loving parents. Like they would do anything for you. As a child, I don't really know a connection with God or with anything outside of what's tangible. What can I touch? And for me, my parents was that, right? They were always there no matter what. Even as a young adult struggling, needed 20 bucks to go get groceries or something, they were always there or they always had extra food at their house, right? And they would do that on purpose. There were seven of us, and my parents always had a full pantry and we'll go shopping at grandma's. And I think that's an important part, knowing that there was always someone there for you. My journey along the way is I've worked many different jobs, and I think for my life I always let jobs define who I was, not until I was older and I realized, no, I'm Ugo. That just, I'm me that gets to do a lot of things, right? And it's always me at the center of that. And that's really what my story is, right? Today, you look at me and I get to work at this huge, amazing shelter. I get to go to school. We just received in the mail yesterday my diploma associates from Bonzi.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And I start at, I call it Big Boy School in September. Aurora University.
Oh, Aurora. Yeah. JJ went to Aurora.
JJ went there? Yeah. Social work, it has a major. I'm not doing social work. That's a hard gig to do. I work with a lot of social workers, and they do a lot, and that's not for me. It's not for me.
So what are you doing your degree in?
Sociology.
Okay.
I love watching people. I love watching groups, right? And like, I want to figure out, or not figure out, but just understand the culture of each individual group, no matter where they're at and how they interact, right? I think with sociology, it pulls me in watching, especially at the shelter, watching people in poverty, right? How do they climb out of that? They have to go over different obstacles. And if we can, I think as a society, we do great taking individuals out of poverty one at a time. We got to get everybody out there. So that's where my discipline's going to come in. We'll see.
That's good. That's cool.
Yeah, that's kind of like the what I'm shooting for.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. But I think the education part is really the journey too. I remember when I decided, all right, I can do this. Because I was one of those, I graduated from high school. Me and my wife got married young. She was 18, I was 19.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we had a kid by the time I was 20. I was like, we weren't. My oldest just graduated from high school, and I haven't even hit 40 yet. So retirement early, I guess, right? Yeah, but I always told myself I'll go back to school, but I hated school growing up. But I was like, I knew I needed it, but I didn't want it. And later on, here at the shelter, actually, we had a counselor there from Waubonsie. She's the one that kind of convinced me, like, you can do this. And I was like, no, I can't. It's for other people. Like, I like what I'm doing already. But she kind of just lit that little spark in me, and I end up going back. And 3 years later, there's one degree, and hopefully another 3 years, there's another one. And or 3 years is, like, I enjoy being in classrooms. I enjoy being around these kids that I'm with in classes, just their perspective and see how they look at life. I enjoy that. I had one teacher allowed me to student teach one of his classes that I took already. I enjoy doing that, and it's just, that's the key. I enjoy everything.
You do enjoy everything.
You do, and that's what I think life was, right? Yeah. I think growing up, I was looking for that job that I can get enough stability where I can go out and enjoy life.
Yeah.
I didn't realize life is the enjoying part, and just if you enjoy life, you enjoy everything part of that.
Yeah. So do you mind sort of walking through then, like, your, you know, career journey? Like, what were you doing, you know, up to the point? And then maybe talk about Hesed House a little bit and just how you ended up doing what you do now.
My journey, it's like I said, I failed. I think I stumbled, right? I stumbled from job to job. And I was one of those guys, whatever job I had, this is what I'm going to do for life, because it's like, this is amazing. And then after a while, it would get boring, and I wouldn't grow with it. I guess that's where the education comes in later, right? But I had different jobs. Right out of high school, I worked in a mailroom. You had to go get a job, right? I got a wife now. I'm like, I got to go get a job. I worked in a mailroom, and that was an amazing job. It was so much fun, 18 and not caring. Working in a mailroom, it's like the movies, right? That's what it was. And did that for a while. There was I worked for Arthur Anderson. Worked for Arthur Anderson when the whole Enron thing happened in the 90s. They all split and all those jobs ended. And I found myself looking for another job. And I was like, well, you know what? I don't want to work in an office. I want to be out there and be on the streets. So I became a guardsman. Cousin told me, hey, let's go become guardsmen. So I was like, great. All right, let's go do it. And went and got a job with BFI and threw garbage. Did that for about 4 years.
What was that like? Was that a tough job?
That was brutal. Yeah. It was brutal. I was telling my son about it the other day. We were doing some work on the house, and like, we worked all day long, and we were like exhausted. I was like, dude, this is nothing. I'm like, I remember he was a baby when I was working this job. Back then, I think all jobs allowed more hazing, right? They're rough. And the guy driving the garbage truck would not let me sit in the front. He made me hang on to the back for 3 days.
Wow.
At the end of the third day, I had to call my wife. Like, I drove, we're working in Norflake. Okay. That's where the thing was. I had to drive back to Aurora every day. And on the end of the third day, when we got in front of our house, I had to call my wife to come out and get me. Like, I could not walk. Physically, my legs were like, you're done. And I remember I took a bath. My wife made a bath for me, and I took a bath, and I laid down. And the next morning, I debated. I did not want to go back. I was like, that is horrible. Who does this? And then the baby started crying. No choice.
I guess I'm going back.
And I took some Tylenols and got in the car and went back. And eventually, once your muscles catch up to what you're doing, it was a fun gig. It was actually pretty fun. It smelled really bad. It was every morning. I don't know how I did it. Every morning, walk up to that truck and it was for that was one of those that like I was doing a job to have some other life. Eventually, that one ran through, and I was like, okay, I'm out of there. And then I kind of ended up in sales and real estate. When I was doing garbage, I knew I didn't want to do it forever. So I took some night classes, got my realtor's license, and started selling houses. I enjoyed the freedom of doing that and the paychecks. Back then, they were making killings on houses. And I was doing that for quite some time, doing that, working on houses. I liked working on houses, and it's something you can do when you're doing real estate. From there, I worked sales around different places and enjoyed sales. And that's when I got introduced to volunteering at Hesed House through my church. I was at this part of my life where I had this amazing sales gig, the job, right? Everybody talks about the job. If I get this job, this house, this wife, like everything would be perfect. And I had the job. And I couldn't seem to like really wrap myself around it. It wasn't enough. Right? I was always fighting for more, I think. It wasn't enough. And I was 31, and I remember driving home one day and thinking, this can't just be it. I prayed. I would go to church. I grew up Catholic. I'm still Catholic and still go to Catholic church and very active in our church. I would go to church, and I would see other families there and be like, only if I had what they had, right? And I didn't know what it was. At the time, it looked material to me, but at one point, I think at the end of that run, it just kind of clicked. I'm like, if I had their faith that everything's going to be okay, I could pretend to have faith. I know I got a check coming in at the end of the week. I could pretend to have faith all week, right? But I didn't have that faith that so many people had, and they were like, faith without works is dead, and I had no idea. No one taught me what this stuff was. I remember driving home, I think the first real prayer I ever had in my whole life. I just asked God to do something. Like, I'm done. Just do something. Like, seriously. I didn't know what to do. And it wasn't, like, to keep that job. It wasn't to, like, keep everything. It was just do something. I didn't know. And actually, I can tell you that, in all honesty, it was I did not know. And I was tired of not knowing. And I sought out other friends, other people that are going through the same thing. And it kind of just, God put those people in my life. And through that process and trying to find who I was, I lost that amazing job because I wasn't amazing at it. I wasn't, and that's how I felt like I wasn't amazing at anything. And I was just there. And I think everything I always did, I'm like, I'm just waiting until they catch on that I'm not supposed to be here, right? I remember a friend of mine telling me that I can find what I'm looking for if I like go help other people, right? And I'm like, where do you find that at? And he's like, probably at the shelter down the street. Like, they have a lot of people if I need help. And then it's so many different things pop in my head around that time. Like, I heard all these different, I want to say cliches or whatever it was, but like, God's in the pots and pans, right? There's a lot of pots and pans at the shelter. And I didn't know what those meant. And I'm like, all right. Well, I hope it works, right? I hope what I'm looking for goes. And first time I went to a shelter, I didn't go there to like help poor people or go help people that were homeless. I went there to like find this relationship with my God. Right? There's this, I think it's an Irish proverb or something. It says, I sought my God I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother and I found all three. Somebody was just giving me advice. Somebody was like literally putting that in my life without telling me that proverb. Like, they were just, go here. Like, I know what you're looking for. And so blindly I went, and I remember I was so nervous when I went the first time. I actually, they said, the guy said, I'm like, how do I get into that shelter to go serve? And he's like, that church you go to, they probably serve there. And I'm like, I've been going there my whole life. I'm like, no, I would know that. And it turned out my church was one of the first PADS sites in Aurora. Like, it's been a part of us for a long time. That Sunday I went to, Father, like, they were shorthanded. with volunteers or people to go minister, and he made it like, hey, please, if you have time tonight, go help. And I'm like, that's too coincidence. Like, he just told me yesterday, and now you're telling me to go help. I remember looking at my wife, and I'm like, I think I'm supposed to go help tonight. And a lot of that, and you're going to hear that through this whole story, like, a lot of that's like, I think. Like, that's how I do everything in my life, I think. And I'm like, all right, I'll go. And I showed up. First time I showed up, super nervous, not knowing what to expect. And you pull up to the top of this hill, like, to enter to the shelter. There are 100 people standing outside waiting for the doors to open. Right? And you just have crowd of people that you have to make your way through to get in a door. And I always walked around like I knew where I was going, but like first time in life, I'm just like, I have no idea. And I walked in, and it was all older people that were serving from our church that were ministering. Find that a lot. And they put me to serve corn. She goes, all right, you're going to serve corn. I'm like, I can't mess that up. And we went there, and there was Karen here, and there was an older lady on this side, and I'm doing corn in the middle. And the first guy that comes to the line, I actually recognize him from like 20 years before. A guy I worked with in that mailroom. This guy lived in his house, and he's homeless now. And he looked at me, and he's like, Hugo, what are you doing here? And I don't know what to say, right? Especially when I'm shocked, it's harder for me to lie, right? When I'm caught off guard, it's harder for me to lie. And he's like, what are you doing here? And like, I'm just like, dude, I'm just looking for God. Take your corn. Keep moving. He's like, all right. And he just keeps moving. And that's what I went there to do. And like the lady next to me laughed, and person next to me laughed, and like the mood lightened up. And I spent the rest of that evening making everybody laugh coming through that line. Like, that was my gift that I can give them today, right? Or my talent that I was able to share was, let's get some enjoyment. And I started looking forward. That night was in the bag. I'm like, we got to do this again. I end up telling my wife about it, and she's like, you come with me. Like, this is so cool. They would put me in desserts. They would put me in the store to give out supplies. And it was just a cool experience. And I looked forward to it. Like, we do the first Sunday of every month with our church. And like, I found myself like going 29 days, just waiting for that one day so we can go serve. The enjoyment I got out of it, I was sharing with other people. Like, hey, dude, I go serve with my church. It's kind of cool. And this place I was working with at the time, it was a dealership. I'm like, hey, we should go serve as a group. And, they're like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Set it up. I'm like, oh, cool. I can set it up. And I set it up for us to go serve as a group, and we did it. And I came back, and I'm like, the next day, Monday, I came back. And you can tell the day there, like, I was having way more enjoyment than everybody else was that was working with me. And we come back on Monday, and we're talking about it. I'm like, hey, what did you think about it? And they're like, oh, that was great. And it was cool. I'm like, all right, well, we're going back next month. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah. They're like, no, we're not. I'm like, well, I signed us up for 12 months. We have the fourth Sunday doing lunch next 12 months. I don't know what we're going to do. They're like, well, I don't know what you're going to do. We're not going in. So I end up reaching out to some friends of mine, which they were more than happy. They were in the same journey I was in, and they wanted to do it. And that was about 5 years ago we started. We still do it. It's a little different, the group that goes with me now. Now I get I end up, I don't know how I connected with them, but it's a new treatment center in Naperville that there are a lot of people that are in treatment there. They'll come out, about 15 of them, and come out with me, and I show them how to go serve.
So people actively in treatment are
actively in treatment, and they're coming out and serving. They're cleaning, they're cooking. And I show them through service is how they can kind of expound their recovery and kind of maintain that. Not maintain it, but be a part of it, right? Yeah. They have to go do all the other stuff in recovery, but it's an important part. And I think a lot of people in recovery or pre-recovery don't realize that service plays a big part in all our lives. At church, we call it ministry, right? In the secular arena, we call it volunteering. But it's called everything, everywhere, and it's the same thing. All of us humans, we need to go serve, right? We're called to go serve. I think that's my job, to go serve. So before I get ahead of myself, I volunteered with that group that I was having coming in. So I'm going with my church. I'm going with them. I remember I had a friend of mine or a guy I met. He was going through something on a Friday night, and he called me. He's like, I don't know what to do. I'm like, I'm really stressed out. I'm like, I'll go pick you up, right? We can go have some coffee, and we could talk about it. or we do something. He's like, yeah, I need to get out of here. I'm like, all right, I'll pick you up. I'm like, pick you up, we'll go do anything. He goes, yeah. So I had this bright idea. It turned out being Good Friday. And I was like, how about we go serve at the shelter? Because that helps me out so much when I'm going through something, right? So I go pick him up, and then we go knock on the door at the shelter. I'm like, hey, man, I'm Ugo from St. Joe's. I just was in the area. Could you guys use some help? And the guy's like, oh, yeah, we're shorthanded with volunteers. Go work the desk upstairs. And we're checking in the men upstairs, talking with them, me and this guy together. He was a younger man. And we spent more of the time kind of just talking about faith in our life. Like, what does that look like? And what does the journey between our relationships look like? And amazing. It was amazing again. And every time I kept doing that, people would call me up. I'm like, well, let's go to shelter. And so eventually my wife says, because I was showing up so much, they asked me to work there. I was not keen to work in there. That was something where you go and you go serve. I just didn't see it as a profession. I'm like, I'm a salesman. This is what I do over here. I do sales, and that's how I support the family. See, I thought my job was to support the family, do those things, and it's not. It's to live for him, and then everything gets taken care of. So I end up starting with Hesed as part-time staff, filling in any shifts they want. And I was just at a really cool place in my life there. Any shift they had open or anything that they needed help with, I'm in. Hey, Ugo, yes. Like, they wouldn't even get out. I'm like, yes, I'll do it. And I found myself working around the clock, different days, different shifts, and enjoying it. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the fun part. One of the guests early on see me there, like, early morning on a Sunday, right? And I was doing the overnight shift. And like, she recognized me coming in through my church and volunteering, and, like, I don't think she knew I was working there yet. And one Sunday morning, I'm not a morning person, night person. I'm just an all-time person.
I get that. You catch me anytime.
This is how I am.
I love it.
And she looked at me. She's like, what are you doing here? Your church here? I'm like, no, I work here now. She goes, oh, you didn't run away. And I'm like, wow, how many people run away? How many people in her life probably ran away? I'm like, don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. And I think because I said that so long ago, like, even if I wanted to, I'm afraid to leave. I don't want to be that one that leaves her life again. And she's already gone and left the shelter and is housed, but I still got to be there. So if her or anybody else come back, they can find me.
Yeah.
But I was there so much, and I enjoy it. I enjoy the people I work with. The people we get to serve. Like, I'm the associate director of the PATS program, overnight shelter part of it.
Okay.
So kind of, this is what makes PATS PATS, right? PATS started off in churches, and as a group, right, as a parish, we can open our doors, bring people in, serve them, and not question where they come from or do they deserve it or not deserve it. And then the next day, give somebody else the opportunity to do it too, right? It's a way that we can live out our gospel, right? So many times we go to church, right? And at the end of Catholic Mass, right, go out and share the word of God. And you're thinking, okay, I got to go out there and be a good Christian. I got to do these things. And then you pull out of the parking lot and somebody cuts you off. You're like, ah! Oh! <Right. laughs> Didn't make it that far. I think in ministry, especially like a PADS ministry, is a perfect place because they're like, go out, you're psyching yourself up. You're like, all right, I got 3 hours here, right? This is my shift I'm covering, 4 hours, 5 hours, whatever it is. I got to be on, right? This is the moment. There are times we think about everything else in our lives, everything that's going on, getting to the job, getting the kids to school, getting those things. We're not thinking those. When you go into a ministry like this, you're like, okay, all right, I got to be Christ to them. I got to be Christ, right? And that's your thing. You're not thinking about kids. You're not thinking about babysitter. You're not thinking about any of the bills that are due next week. You're thinking about, I got to be Christ. And it was so cool. It was so cool to do that. And to work there and to work in the overnight pads, what I do now, I don't have to push someone's future story. I don't have to question why they're there again. I don't have to do any of those things. My job is to get them through the next 12 hours. Hmm. Like, that's it. And what I do, you can see me there every night when you come in. I work Sunday through Thursday. I love working at the door. I love greeting everybody in, shaking their hands, fist bumps, whatever it is. Some hugs. I'm a hugger. And just welcome everybody in. Right? You think about it, being homeless in our society, you get kicked out of everywhere. You got kicked out of your home, right? Go to a restaurant, you're homeless, get out of here. You're hanging out on a bench. Hey, get out of here. Keep that for someone else, right? And you get to the point where you end up at the door where I'm at, right? I'm welcoming. Like, hey, how was your day? Or just welcome, right? I know everybody there by name. I've been off work for a week, so when I go back, there's gonna be 20 new people that came in this week, right? Every 8 hours, somebody comes in. Wow, well, that's more than 20. Well, whatever it's gonna be a lot. But the ones I do know and the ones I see there, I know their stories. I know what they're going through. So just, hey, did you get to the doctor's or did you see your daughter? Whatever it may be, but to remember that and have that conversation when they come in, right, that's all I got to do. It's a job. Yeah. I get to like, Ugo, this is your job. Just welcome people in, and just be there for them. And that's what I get to do. And it's amazing. And I don't do it I don't look at it that I'm just there for the guests coming in. I have made so many relationships with our volunteers that come in, interns. That's how I met Liz and coworkers. Like, this is an opportunity, like I said, right? You're on. You got to be Christ in them. I remember looking at my wife and saying, what if this is supposed to be our whole life?
How did that go over?
What do you mean? I'm like, what if this is how we're supposed to be all the time? And let's see what happens. And like, I remember making that transition, like, this is who I have to be. And I don't do it perfectly, right? Always, I can do it perfectly 99 times. And at one person that really need me, I failed them. And it still happens. And I can't reach that perfection. And I probably never will, but I have to try. We have to be that same person at Hesed House, at Walmart, in the ER, wherever you're at, in traffic. You have to be that same person. And I find it, and it's kind of, if you practice it and if you live it more, it happens more, right? I look at, I heard somebody's analogy of like what church is, right? Or they're trying to explain church to somebody. He kind of summed it up. So in football, right? Anybody plays football, you kind of get into the huddle. You kind of say what the play is. You say break and go run to play. And then you run to play and you're like, oh, I got hit that way. That didn't work. You come back in the huddle and you tell them, right? Hey, that didn't work that way. All right, let's run to play this way. All right, break and go do it. And that's what church is every week for me, right? We huddle up as a group, especially everybody in our ministry, right? We huddle up. All right, this is the plan. Okay, let's see if it works. And you just leave the church parking lot and then you get, they didn't make it that far. All right, come back. Let's huddle up again. And you kind of get your instructions for the week. And that's what I look like. I'm like, all right, so we got to take this very seriously. Like, what are instructions and how we're going to run these plays? And that's what it is. I'm lucky to work at a place where that's what's expected of me.
Right.
And I don't think people are that lucky usually to do that.
Yeah. I love that analogy. That's a really cool analogy. I'd never thought of it in that way before. That's good stuff. So you say you're the overnight one of the directors for the overnight at Hesed House. So the PADS program, can you explain just a little bit about what the PADS program is and how all that works for people who don't necessarily know?
Yeah. PADS. So now I'm getting excited. I'm like, this is stuff I know. PADS, Public Action Deliver Shelter. Really, that's what it is. It's you and me are going to provide shelter for people. PADS traditionally is people go from church to church. Every night, a different church has it. Or group, and they open their doors and allow these people from they're experiencing homelessness to come in, use their facility, shower, eat, sleep, wash clothes, do those things. What's unique about Hesed House, being in one location and allowing these other churches coming in to minister in their PADS program, so kind of like Hesed House is the building, the church that comes in is the PADS ministry. And it's their place. Every time I meet new people coming in from different churches or new coordinator from the church, I'm like, this is your house. Like, I'm here to support you because you're the ones are ministering to people that night. And however to make that ministry grow and to be vibrant, that's what I want to do. If you work at Hesed House, if you're lucky enough to work there forever, great. Most people don't get a chance to work at any job forever. Hmm. But if somebody's doing ministry in their life, they're doing ministry forever. And they're the ones that are going to be there year after year, day after day. They're going to be there when they had the child, when they lost a child, whenever it is. These people are going to be there. If you help them grow their ministry, they're able to be more impactful to these people, to the people that are experiencing homelessness in Aurora when they need them. And that's what I do there. And Pat's kind of build those things up. The churches, they bring in the food for a night. We're close to like 200 people a night.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
A lot of people. Families. I think before I went on vacation, I think there was like 28 kids.
Wow. Yeah,
28 kids staying in just emergency pad shelter part. Not the other part where more of the families live at, just emergency one. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Kids and homelessness is it gets me every time.
For sure.
Right? And you see your own kids. You see your own vulnerabilities. Like, that could be my family.
Yeah.
But bring it back. What were we talking about?
No, you were just explaining a little bit of Pesset House and pads and all that stuff.
So every night a church comes in or organization comes in, they're kind of running the show, the food, the different services. People there at Hesed House, they have lockers where they could put some of their kind of, just some, it's like a 3 feet by 1 feet kind of square kind of thing, like a gym locker.
Yeah.
So it is, that's where they keep all their personal belongings. Like everything in life fits in there. And what we have keys, it's locked. It's always under lock. I tell people when they're living there, they feel bad. They're asking you if you're their minister. They're like, oh, can you open my locker if they ask you too many times? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, I tell them, like, I'll do it 1,000 times. That's all your stuff. Like, lock it. Like, yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
We do those. Every night it happens. There's someone that comes in that they're there for the right person at the right time. I remember one time we had a situation. We had a young lady. I was going through a lot of stuff. She just recently came homeless and was just going through a lot of stuff. She had some mental health issues and some other things. And I remember trying to work with her through those things. I'm not trying professional. I show up. That's what I do. That's my degree. I show up. And I remember trying to work with her, work through those things and just get her. My whole, like I told you earlier, my thing is to get you through the next 12 hours. Next 12 hours and then tag somebody else in and they'll be able to do it. And working as a group and working as a team, we can keep those things going. And I remember we're working through them and like I didn't know what else to do. And there was two ladies that were standing or checking everybody in and giving them assigning beds at that time. And they seen what I was doing. And then one just tapped and she goes, I'll take over. I'm like, yes. Like she took over and the other one joined in and like they were there with her, comforting her 10 minutes. But it gave me that 10 minutes. I remember I snuck away. I drank a coffee. Like I was like trying to figure out what's next because a lot of times like what's next, right? And not everybody has all the tools for all the problems at all the times. And I remember thinking what next? And like I had the idea. I'm like, oh, I got it. And I'm like, all right. Tap them out. All right. I tagged back in. Whatever we did kind of like soothed the situation down. I was able to put her to bed. She went to sleep and like slept the whole night through. I'm like, all right, that worked. And they were asking me like, how did you know to do that? I'm like, I didn't. It just came.
Yeah. Right.
It just came.
Holy Spirit.
Yeah. It's the Holy Spirit. It's not me. Right. It's not me. It was them and all of us working as a team that allowed us to get through that. Hmm. And that's repeated night after night. And it's pretty cool. I do it with my coworkers and everybody I work with. Like we working with different people and not everybody going through there is easy to relate with. Right. And those are the ones I kind of seek out the most are more challenging people that are experiencing homelessness. I really want to be there for them because I can just look into their eyes and see that how many people turned them away. Like that has to stop. And I can't put that on anybody else. It's no one else's fault. But once they get there to us, like we're not allowed to say no.
Wow. Yeah. That's powerful.
Right? And you take that out, of your toolbox, like you can't say no. It makes you think and it makes you work. And I come home some nights that I'm like exhausted, but still smiling. I'm like, all right, we made it through.
Wow.
We made it through. So.
Gosh, that is really inspiring. It's cool to see you're so passionate about your work. I really love that. One thing that occurred to me as we've been talking, though, is that, you know, when you're dealing with homelessness, I mean, it's not just a lack of a home, right? That you're dealing with. You're dealing with a lot of times substance abuse issues, you know, addictions. You're dealing with just all these situations sort of around homelessness, sort of contributing to it. I think I could see myself feeling very hopeless very quickly, right? So how do you keep from allowing sort of that hopelessness to overtake that sort of zeal you have?
It's funny because you bring up hope, and I always said I was a salesman, right? I loved when I did sales. I loved doing sales and working with different people and just meeting those needs, right? And when I worked with this one medical distribution place, and I went and worked real small doctor's offices and try to meet their needs so they can treat people in poor neighborhoods. Like, this was like something I knew back then that I should be doing, and I was doing it, right? And I was like, I could see them being able, oh, I can afford to do this now, I can afford to do that, and that's kind of like what I like doing, right? And when I came to Hesed House, I'm like, I'm still in sales, I just get to sell hope now.
Huh.
Right, that's what I'm doing. I'm selling hope on a nightly basis. And I just graduated from Waubonsie, got my associates, and I started with AU. And when I started that journey 3 years ago, everybody at the shelter knows what's going on with my life, right? I live in the same city the shelter's at. I live down the street. Like, most of them know where I live at. They drive, they walk past my house. Hey, Hugo. I'm like, hey, what's up, guys? Like, it's and that's the cool thing. Like, you're going to see me on the block. That's how I say it. And I remember there was one night, there was a situation happening, and I had to intervene. It was like this guy and this guy, like, everybody was arguing, right? If you're living in a shelter area, or you're living anywhere with a lot of people, that happens, right? We're a family. You live in a, you got a family, right? That happens. Right. And we're a family, and it happens. And I was in the middle of that, and I was trying to, like, break it up. Hey, guys, no, you go sit over there. Go sit. You act a parent sometimes, right? You do this. And this one guy tapped me on my shoulder, and he's like, hey, Hugo. I'm like, not right now, dude. Like, I'm busy. Like, hold on, I'm busy. He's like, I just want to tell you, I'm going back to school. I'm like, wait, what? And hold on. What, you going back to school for what? He's like, yeah, I'm going to go get my GED. He goes, you showed me you going back to school. If you can do it, I can do it. I forgot about these other two guys arguing. I was like, oh, forget it. I'm like, that's amazing. And that's why I do what I do, to show you that you can do it. Huh. See, me going to school, it's cool. But if I can get someone to get another tool to overcome some obstacle that's keeping them where they've been at, that's why I'm going to school. Right? It's the same thing we do anything, to give someone else the art. If I can do it, you can do it. I tell everybody that all the time. If I can do it, you can do it. One of the best compliments I heard in recovery, somebody tell their husband, if Hugo can do it, you could do it. I'm like, you're right. You are 100% right. I think that's a compliment, because that's how it should look. This stuff, life shouldn't look hard. It should be easy, right? Most of us, like, we want to think, like, when you see a swan or a duck in a pond, right, and just going real smooth, there's a lot of paddling going on underneath there, and that's what it is. Once you get involved in it and you see that, there's a lot of paddling going on, but if you have the passion, or if you just show up, it just happens. And so that's kind of where the hope comes from. It comes from within the people there, right? From time to time, things happen. I get to go do advocacy work with some of the guests there, and go to Springfield and watch them talk to one of our senators or one of our representatives and say, this is my story. This is why I'm going through homelessness. And this is why we need to fund this bill, or this is, it's not right. This is getting cut, or whatever it is. And just to see them light up, like I'm talking with you right now, and like, to be passionate about that. That's so cool to see, right? I teach with advocacy, and I teach the people that go and do these things with me. We all know our own problem, and we can all say what we need to get. No one usually listens, but if we take other people's problems and go advocate for them, people tend to listen. Oh, that's for them. Let's go do it. And something magical happens. This old man taught me this a long time ago. He goes, my job in life is I take care of you and God takes care of me. And we do that through advocacy. I tell them, look, if we put other people's needs ahead of your own, right? I know it looks devastating. You're in homelessness. Like, this is going on, this is going on. I get it. There was this young man that we would go with, and his story changed over the years. Like, the way he delivered it on the last times we went, and to hear him, and I helped him write it a couple times, and you got this 3-hour trip usually when we make it. And he talks about some of the funds that were cut from emergency housing to get these families. There was, I think over the last 6 years, the emergency housing fund was cut more than half. I think it was at $14 million. I think it's at $5 million now or something. Wow. Under that. Like, these are families one time help you not go into homelessness, right? We all have that, right? If you're lucky enough, you have credit to carry you through a job loss. But if you don't have credit, you can't get carried through that job loss. You can't put stuff on the cards. You don't have cards. And you just, like, you need that one mortgage, pay that mortgage payment for 1 month. We'll get this new job. We're back and going. That's what that emergency fund does, right? It's a one-time help. And they cut that. And we're going out there and advocating on that. And he talked about this young girl and her family living at the shelter and how those emergency funds, if they were there, that family would never showed up. Hmm. Right? And then he talked about he feels bad because he takes that family's bed because he's going through it. And he's in his 30s, male, which there's not a lot of help for that. But he feels because he's going through this and his stuff was substance abuse and without the lack of Medicaid where he can finally get services and those are going away. Right. They're not letting, not many places are taking different managed cares. And he's like, because I can't get this stuff, I'm stuck here in this mat and I'm taking a bed away from the girl. Like, to hear him share that story and it's not his story, their story. Like, you see these senators and representatives, they're like, I get you. They can understand that. Right? They're no longer looking at this 30-year-old male. They can picture in their eyes, they can picture this family. Huh. So he was able to get quite a few yeses out of them and switch their votes. So, like, that's what we do. And that's where I get the hope from. That's where you see it. When you see someone else caring for someone else. And people, everybody has their own journey, their own path they're walking in. And I think other people walk on our paths. We get to be lights on their path. And how bright you're shining is how quick they'll make it past you. Hmm. If you're not that bright, they're going to be stuck there. They're going to be fumbling around in the dark. And the brighter you can get, the easier you get them to the next light. And like I said, after those 12 hours, you take someone else's hand, let them take it. And that's what it is. I remember when I interviewed for Hesed House, I'm like, I don't know how to give one person out of homelessness. I have not the faintest clue. I'm not in that arena. But I know people who do. And my job is to build those relationships and pass them off.
Yeah.
And that's right. that's what we're all supposed to do. Right? We all do it in our ministries. You do it in your ministry, right? You just build that relationship, build that trust, and then put them in somebody's hands that are more capable.
For sure. Yeah, that's so well put. It's a little more tangible in your profession and your ministry than mine, probably. And but I think thinking of it like that, I mean, we're all together sort of like ministering to people as one, right? And you take this little part and I take this little part and we all do what God has called us to do, right?
So yeah.
That's good stuff. You talked a little bit about the advocacy stuff. I want to go a little bit more into that because I feel like there's a lot of like misunderstanding about homelessness and sort of there's caricatures of homelessness, right? That like if you're homeless, you are these things, you know. What is your experience with sort of like breaking down some of those caricatures in people's minds and the people that come that you serve? And does that question make sense?
No, it makes total sense. Okay. And I think where the word homeless hits the worst is somebody going through homelessness, right? The public or other people can have their view of what homelessness is, right? And still, if as long as they have their hope or they and hope's not everything. That's why we go advocate because you need these other social foundations there to hold up any society. We won't get into that because that's...
That could be a whole nother, thing.
Yeah. And if you allow comments on this, like, you know, no. But there was this man one time. He was in his late 50s at the time and alcoholic, going through homelessness. And I remember he soiled himself. And when I found him, when I came across him, I'm like, hey, man, let's get you some clothes. Let's get you in the shower. Let's change. And he kind of looked at me like, no, I'm right here. I'm not going nowhere. I'm like, come on, man. I'll help you walk down there. Well, let's get you. I'll get you clothes. We'll do whatever it was. And I remember got him some clothes and we kind of got him into the bathroom area. And like right before he walked into the shower areas, he looked at me and he's like, why are you doing this? I'm homeless. In his mind, he's like, I'm homeless. Like, why are you caring for me? And I looked at him. I go, no, you're not homeless. You're going through homelessness, dude. That's it. This homelessness is not defining you. Mm. You're going through homelessness. You're a lack of house, right? You don't say I'm housed. You don't say I'm housed, right? We don't walk right. around, I'm housed. Right. No, you're going through homelessness, dude. And like, everybody deserves dignity. Mm. And that's what we're here to do, right? And that's what... He looked at me, he smiled, he's like, thanks, Hugo. I'm like, cool, buddy. and shut the door and he took care of himself. And a lot of people fall into that where they're hopeless. Like, I'm stuck in this hole. I'm not going to come out. Like, I might as well just stay here. Right? I remember there was a guy, young kid, late 20s. He told me, he goes, I'm going to be a homeless drunk the rest of my life. He goes, I reserve to be a homeless drunk the rest of my life. He said something. And I looked. I'm like, how can you make that decision right now? Like, you're so young. But he couldn't see any farther than that. This is who I am, right? You get those depression kicks in. You get all that kick in. And, like, there's no way coming out of that hole. You will stay in that hole. And people walk past you in that hole. Some will be like, oh, here's a couple dollars. And that'll help you. You're still in the hole. Someone walk past. I'll pray for you. You're still in that hole. What I do is I jump in the hole. Like, let's get out. And that's what we got to do, right? Let's all jump in the holes together and let's get out together. Because that's the only way. You got to walk hand in hand with the next person. I always thought that. Like, I remember when I was going through something and I would go to these small groups and like, that would be cool for that hour, hour and a half. But then you got your next 23 hours. What do I do with? You can have a house, but the house could still feel empty, right? Not until somebody got in that hole with me and showed me how they got out of it, then I understood. And that's what we do there. Sometimes be careful because some of those holes are real deep.
Yeah, sure.
They're real deep.
Right.
And I remember telling some interns one time, they asked about somebody. And there was a lot there. They were young. And they were asking just to ask. And I told them, be careful. Do not ask anything you're not willing to help with. And that's like kind of my motto in life. I'm not going to ask unless I'm willing to help. Because you turn and you ask the wrong question to the right person, they're going to bring it up. And what are you going to do? We just left church. We just huddled. And they just told us to go pray Christ to everybody. And on Tuesday, I'm like, I'll pray for you. I mean, they're gonna be like, how about you get in the hole with me?
Yeah, journeying alongside somebody and not just brushing them off, I guess, right? That's challenging.
It is. It is. It is challenging. Sometimes it's exhausting, but it just seems right. Look at the things that are the biggest in your life. They're all challenging.
Yeah.
Right? The easy stuff, we forgot about it. Probably already threw it out.
Yeah.
The challenging stuff, that's the stuff that sticks with us.
Hmm.
And that's what we're called to do. There's no easy roads. No easy roads.
Yeah.
Just make them look easy. Just like in football, if you go and put all that practice in, you make the game look easy.
Yeah, you're right.
Right? What are we practicing at home? What are we practicing when no one's looking? Right? Those are the things that are doing, like, makes who we are or makes me. Like, I struggle to this day, like, how far do I really want to be like St. Francis?
Right? Yeah.
You heard the St. Francis prayer, right?
Yeah.
How far do I want to go to that, right? And I talked about with a friend of mine. He was talking about something else, self-defense or something like that. I'm like, this guy's telling me to turn the other cheek. I'm an all or nothing kind of guy. Yeah. Like, I don't know how to be in the middle. And I think that's what, like, my ministry and my life is. It's, I don't know how to be in the middle. Or all or nothing.
Yeah, right? You're either all in on somebody's story and like you said, being in that hole with them or nothing, right?
Or nothing.
Yeah.
And you could be honest with them too and be like, look, I have no idea how to get out of that one, but I know this guy or this woman that does.
Yeah.
Here's their number, call them.
Right.
And when they do, and they call them, and when we all work as a team, right, we all minister in these little things that we know how to do well, right, and then can pass someone off to where their light is a lot brighter than ours in that arena, allow them to go through that. They're not going to stumble as much, right? They might be able to get through it with us, with our light. It's not that bright, right? But allow them to go to the other one that's brighter.
Yeah.
I have to tell myself sometimes I can't. I don't know how. I can't. I don't know how. And ask somebody how to do it.
And your job, I mean, you've even talked as we've sort of gotten to know each other here a little bit. I mean, your job doesn't stop even at that 12 hours, right? I mean, you do a lot of work even with people, you know, outside of Hesed House responsibilities. Can you talk a little bit about that and that sort of this discipleship you do with some of those people?
I'll explain this. This is my life. And when I started at Hesed, I remember early on, there would be somebody that was going through homelessness that wants to get recovery, right? And they want to get sober or they want to go to detox. And my answer was to them like, the counselor's there at 9 a.m. Monday. Ugo, it's Saturday at 3. Like, and you give an alcoholic and addict time, what they're going to do, change their mind.
Right.
That drug a kick in or the lack of it a kick in, and that takes priority over like, where I think we get these moments in our life where like we're supposed to go do this, and if we don't do it when we're supposed to, like it's gone, and you gotta wait till next time it comes by and never know when it'll come. There was this guy that came in. It was a Saturday daytime. I was there at the shelter, and this gentleman, he was in his late 40s. He came in, sat across the desk from me. He was crying. He's like, "Ooh, I don't want to live like this anymore." I'm like, "Okay, what do you want me to do?" I had no idea. I never had this experience before. He's like, I don't want to drink. I don't want to do drugs anymore. I'm alcohol and crack has just had its run with me, and I want help now. I'm like, all right. I'm like, I've seen this on TV before. I'm like, how about if I call and like, let's see if we can find you a detox bed. I think that's the steps we make. Let's find you a detox bed and get you in there. He's like, all right. I'm like, if I make a call right now, you're going? He's like, yeah. You're in the suburbs, right? There's nothing out in the suburbs unless you have really good insurance.
Right.
Everything for if you're going through any kind of poverty is in the city.
Right.
So we called and was able to find him a bed. And we're like, great. They're like, all right, what time is he going to be here? I was like, ooh, that's a good question. How do I get him there? Like, I'm like, I'll get right back to you. Hold the bed. We'll figure it out. And there was a guy that was volunteering at that time, was a friend of mine. I had a couple of my friends there. That's how a lot of it works there in the shelter. You like, you tell your friends, hey, what are you doing?
You want to come up and help?
Yeah, come and hang out. And I don't have that many friends anymore. Just the ones that are just like doing what I'm doing, they'll stick around. And, he's like, hey, we'll take him. I'm like, cool. All right. Hey, he'll be there in 1 hour and 10 minutes. That's how long it takes to get there. All right, great. Threw him in the car. He went. I was like, wow. That moment I realized, I'm like, this happens 24/7, not 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anytime when you want help, we're taught in life, right? Whenever you want help, pick up the phone, call some medical place. But how do you do that in poverty? How do you get there? How do you get there if you have no family?
Right.
If your brother and sister called you and said he wanted help, you'll drop everything.
Yeah.
Even if they're a couple states over, you will go do those things. Well, you got someone that has no one, right? Everybody shut the doors on them or kicked them out or whatever it may be. And it could be due to that addiction. Yeah. And how many times have they promised before, but no one was there in that window that they wanted to help, that they really follow through, right? Or even that support, right? And he went, and I was like, we're on to something. So then the opportunity presented itself again. Somebody wanted to go, and it was outside those hours. We're like, all right, let's try this again. Tried it, and I text those same friends. Hey, anybody want to take him? Oh, yeah, we'll be right there. Okay, and it worked. And we've seen that people wanted help, and it was outside of even the times I'm there. So it kind of recreated, it needed a name. We call it the Rapid Response Team. Mm-hmm. It's all volunteer-based, and it's in its like fourth year, I think, or going into its fourth. Anybody, anytime when they want help, find a volunteer, find a staff, find somebody. Reach me on Facebook. We will. Like, I'm available 24/7. You can't hide the name Ugo Saltgero. Like, it's me, and I'm that face. And we'll get you a bed, and then it will take you. And there's been times, every time that we send out a text, there's about 30 people on the volunteer list, and and we sent out a mass text to everybody saying, hey, we got a man or a woman that needs to get a detox. Anybody available? Within like minutes, somebody shows up every time. And, yeah. And their thing is like, Ugo, I had today off, but I didn't know why. Hmm. Or I was driving down the street. I didn't know why. And he just pulled in. Thank you, Ugo. I was telling God to use me today. Those are the things that happen. Yeah. And the first year, I think we sent like 58 people, 25 never came back to homelessness. Mm. Right. Year after year, we have about the same amount of people that will go. There's times that we go. I go myself. I take my family with me. Right. If I'm off and somebody needs to get the detox, I looked at the wife. Hey, one time there was a woman from the shelter and, she had to go. Staff called me, and I'm like, I was trying to call around, see if there was a woman or somebody else that would go with me to go take her. I couldn't find anybody. My wife's like, what are you doing? It's like 11:30 at night. I'm like, this woman needs to get into detox. We're working with someone out here. They're going to get her into a treatment place in like on the East Coast, but we need to get her in there today before she changes. All this stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
And my wife's like, I'll go with you. I'm like, okay. I never thought of it, right? I'm like, okay, let's go. And me and my wife go pick her up. And we wait with her in the room till she gets admitted, do all those things. And like me and my wife just had an amazing time that night. And we're going back to the car and my wife was just like smiling. And I was like, now you know why I do it? And she's like, yeah, I know why you do it. I'm like, that's cool. You get to be there for people. And that's like what my life is. And I'll have the family. We got our minivan. My little daughter will be in the back seat with them. Like she's 6 years old. And there's a guy that's still intoxicated sitting in the next seat over. And she's like, so how did that work out for you? Like she just knows the language. She's like, has that conversation with them.
I love it.
And she tells them, I hope this works out. Like man. She understands. And she understands that that's dad's life. This is what we do. And it's cool to be with your family in this ministry. We with church, where me and my wife are the coordinators for our church that does pads there at the shelter. When we go the first Sunday, all of our three kids go with us. My daughter, she's little. We took her on accident the first time because we had no babysitter. So we're like, oh, you're coming with us. And now she would not go with us. Like, she gets mad when she can't go. She loves handing out desserts. She loves talking. She feels that that's her family, too. It's an extension. Mm. And my older boys, I remember my older one wasn't going to play football for his senior year. One of the guys there knew, like, he wasn't playing football and kind of, like, sat him down for 15 minutes. This guy had two masters.
Wow.
He's going through homelessness. He's living there. Like, he's out of homelessness, got this great job now, and he's working towards there. But when he was going through there, he found out, and he sat my son. He's like, Ugo, like, people like us in poverty, we need the education. What your football thing's going to do is just going to tack on to make you look better for the college. Like, he's having these real conversations with them. My kid's getting that conversation at a shelter.
Wow, yeah.
I mean, that's the cool stuff. And
that's cool.
I think that's the part where, like, a time or a life doesn't stop and end. It's continuous. It's 24/7. You just got to look for it.
Yeah.
And be ready for that phone to ring anytime. Hmm. And when it rings, it's pretty cool.
Gosh, that's good stuff. You're a fun guy to talk to. I really do enjoy this. Let's wrap it up with the last two questions that I like to ask everybody. So first, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
I have to say it's the one I have now at the shelter. You just never know what's going to happen. Someone can come into homelessness. Somebody can leave homelessness. There could be a baby born. You're just anything, and you learn so much there, right? Just in the small things you learn. I remember when I first, like one of the first nights I ever worked there, like worked there. First night I worked there, they gave me some keys. They're like, good luck. Like, that's remember that. He's like, here's some keys, good luck. That second night, I think it was, somebody just destroyed the bathroom. And I remember telling this young man that was working with me, he was there much longer, and I'm 2 days in, right? I'm like, all right, who's going to clean that? He looked at me like, we are. Are you serious? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, I guess this is what I signed up for. And we went at it and we went cleaning. So it was those lessons that you learn at a place like this. Hmm. No one's going to do it unless you do it. Hmm. Yeah. Craziest job, the one I'm in right
for
now.
For sure. Yeah. Still I can totally see that. Can totally see that. Okay. So finally, what is one piece of advice that you would give to anyone trying to bring ministry into what they do?
Ministry has to be in you first, Right? Ministry is not something you show up to. Right? It's an opportunity when you're first starting off to show up and say, okay, I'm on now. What's going on? Right? There's that one song, right? I can't remember. I'm horrible with names of song, but he's like, all right, God, take over. It's your stage. I remember doing that going into ministry. I'm like, all right, it's yours. Take over. Just work through me. And I found myself more and more in life as soon as I wake up in the morning. All right, it's your stage. Let me know what you need done. My morning prayer is let me know what you need of me, and can you make it obvious because I'm stupid. and really, that's it. He makes it obvious. He makes it obvious every day that, like, you, it is too hard to turn away. Like, you're looking, you're like, oh, that's the hole I got to jump in today. And if you got out of it already, you'll be able to help anybody else get out of it. So, yeah, have ministry within yourself first, and you can take it anywhere, Walmart or the shelter.
Yeah. That's good. Well, I can't say thanks enough for hanging out with me and talking, and it's been a lot of fun.
So. Thanks for having me. This was cool and exciting. It was not as nerve-wracking as I thought it would be. It's more of a conversation with a microphone.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we're just hanging out in my kitchen.
So. All right. Thanks, man.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Ugo as much as I enjoyed interviewing him and even listening to this interview again. I just got so much out of it, and his passion is just infectious, like I said. And yeah, he just makes you want to go out there and do ministry. And I think it shows just what a love that God can burden us with and let us do ministry in all sorts of different places. So yeah, I hope you really enjoyed hearing from Ugo. Listen, I have got so many great people still to come on this podcast. We are just still ramping up in a lot of ways. So be sure to stay tuned. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you know when episodes are updated. And until next time, get out there and hustle.